Good news for Americans quarantined on a cruise ship.
They're getting evacuated as long as they don't have the coronavirus.
Also, new details from China where healthcare workers have been infected. I'm Scott Simon.
And I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro, and this is Up First from NPR News.
Tweets from President Trump are seen as interference in Justice Department business, even by some supporters.
I think that the Attorney General says it's getting in the way of doing his job. Maybe the president should listen to the Attorney General.
Senator Mitch McConnell talking to Fox News yesterday after Attorney General Barr complained the president's tweets make it impossible for him to do his job.
And a peace deal between the U.S. and the Taliban, but no details yet from Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. Stay with us. We'll give you the news you need to start your day.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Google. From Connecticut to California, from Mississippi to Minnesota, millions of American businesses are using Google tools to grow online. Learn more at google.com/grow.
Passengers have been mostly confined to their rooms, quarantined on the Diamond Princess for almost 2 weeks. And despite the cruise ship being under lockdown in Japan, coronavirus infections have continued to rise.
But now the U.S. State Department is sending a charter plane to evacuate American citizens from the vessel. NPR's Jason Beaubien joins me now from Hong Kong for the latest on this global health crisis. Good morning.
Good morning.
So let's start with what is happening with the cruise ship that's quarantined at a dock in Yokohama, Japan.
Yeah, things just continue to get worse. The Japan Ministry of Health just announced that another 67 people on board have tested positive. This brings the total number of cases on the ship to 285 now.
Wow.
Everybody on the Diamond Princess has basically not been allowed to leave under a two-week quarantine. And this quarantine might be keeping the virus from spreading into Japan, but it's clearly not stopping it from spreading on the boat. So the U.S., yes, has finally said it's going to come in and extract any Americans who want to get off. But it's also not clear that the roughly 350 U.S. citizens are all going to accept the offers of this evacuation.
And why is it? What are U.S. officials requiring of the people that they're going to take off the boat?
So I've been communicating with some of the people on the boat, and I've seen the letter that the U.S. Embassy sent out to them. And here's the deal. If you get off the boat and you fly back, you're going to have to do another 14-day quarantine on an airbase in the U.S. once you land. And now, if this evacuation happens when they're saying it's going to happen, which looks like it would be Monday, these passengers and crew would have almost been on the verge of serving out their 14-day quarantine on the Diamond Princess. There would be another 2 days, and then they were supposed to be released into Japan on Wednesday.
But there was no guarantee that that might have still happened, right? So this might be the best deal they could get?
That's right. It's not clear that Japan was actually going to let people off, given the fact that all of these new cases are being found on the boat.
And what about elsewhere? What's happening with this outbreak?
You know, this remains primarily a China health problem. Despite, you know, we're hearing other cases in different parts of the world, new deaths popping up. Even inside China, it remains a problem, primarily inside Hubei province. You know, to be clear, there are thousands of cases in other parts of China, but Hubei is really the epicenter. Every day, we're getting another 2,000 cases, 3,000 new cases from Hubei, 100 deaths a day, primarily from there. And again, it's really focused in and around Hubei and the city of Wuhan.
And I guess the big question is China finally getting a handle on this? I mean, have we reached the point where these numbers will or may start to go down?
And that is really the big question that's out there right now. You know, it appeared that this thing was starting to plateau, and then China changed the case definition. They basically said that they were unable before to tell whether some cases were actual cases because they didn't have the ability to test everybody. They've thrown in this new clinical definition of what it is to be infected, and that is making the numbers go up, and it's also raising questions that there might be a lot of other cases out there that haven't been gotten picked up.
That's NPR's Jason Beaubien reporting from Hong Kong. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Unusual tension this week between President Trump and his Attorney General, William Barr.
I cannot do my job here at the department with a constant background commentary that undercuts me.
That was the Attorney General in an interview on ABC Thursday when he said he wished the president would just stop some of his tweets.
To have public statements and tweets made about the department about our people in the department, our men and women here, about cases pending in the department, and about judges before whom we have cases, make it impossible for me to do my job.
And now reports that the Justice Department is taking another look at the prosecution of former Trump National Security Advisor Michael Flynn, and anger from the White House as the DOJ fails to prosecute Andrew McCabe, formerly of the FBI. White House reporter Aisha Roscoe joins us now. Good morning.
Good morning.
So Barr's comments raised a lot of eyebrows. How unusual is it for a member of Trump's cabinet to publicly criticize him?
It's been pretty unusual for them to do it while still in office. Trump's been clear that he likes people who are loyal. He's been unhappy in the past when people criticize him. These comments from Barr came after the Justice Department recommended a sentence for Roger Stone, Trump's longtime confidant, that and Trump tweeted that he thought it was too harsh. The Justice Department reversed its recommendation on sentencing for Stone, and Barr used this interview to say that the president did not ask him to change the sentencing recommendation, and he wants the president to stop tweeting about these kinds of cases.
So the president is not known for taking criticism well. How did he take what is a pretty public taking to task?
Surprise, surprise, he tweeted. He said that he has the legal right to weigh in on cases, though he has not chosen to do that. Quote, so far, my colleague Ryan Lucas has reported that the DOJ let the White House know about the interview after it was taped, but before it aired. And then yesterday, there was some big news. The DOJ said it would not seek any criminal charges against Andrew McCabe for authorizing an aide to talk to the press about an investigation. This is one of the people involved in the Russia probes who has been a big target for President Trump's criticism. McCabe was fired from his job in March 2018, but Trump still talks and tweets about him all the time. Here's how he described him earlier this week.
Nothing happened with all the people that did it and launched a scam. Where's Comey? Why? Where is Comey? What's happening to McCabe? What's happening to Lisa and Peter Strzok and Lisa Page? What's happening with them? It was a whole setup. It was a disgrace for our country, and everyone knows it, too. Everyone, including NBC, which gives a lot of fake news.
The president has not tweeted or spoken about this new development with McCabe. It will be a test of whether he listens to Barr's warning about tweeting and whether he'll weigh in, as he said he has every right to do in a Justice Department case.
So what is next on this story? Stone is being sentenced this week, right?
Yeah, he'll be sentenced this week on Thursday. Trump has been asked whether he'll offer him a pardon. He said this week he didn't want to talk about that yet. And we'll know more about this AP report of the DOJ taking another look at Michael Flynn's case in which Flynn pleaded guilty. The president has two rallies this week, one in Phoenix on Wednesday and on Colorado Springs on Thursday. So we'll see if he talks about it there.
That's NPR White House reporter Aisha Roscoe. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
And for more of our White House coverage, be sure to check out the NPR Politics podcast. There's a truce in the making between the U.S. and the Taliban. If successful, it would open the way for a deal that might eventually bring American troops home from Afghanistan and end 18 years of war.
But there hasn't been much talk about it from the stage of a major international meeting going on right now in Munich.
NPR's Rob Schmitz is at the Munich Security Conference. Rob, thanks so much for being with us.
Good morning, Scott.
U.S. officials met with their counterparts from Afghanistan. What do we know about the details?
Well, we first heard about this deal yesterday from a senior U.S. official who spoke on the condition of anonymity. And according to this official, the U.S. and Taliban have agreed to a 7-day reduction of violence that'll cover the entire country. And if the Taliban, which controls roughly half of Afghanistan, is able to make good on this, then a U.S.-Taliban peace agreement would be signed within 10 days. And it would mean a drawdown of U.S. troops from their current levels, around 13,000, to less than 9,000 U.S. military personnel. And here at the Security Conference in Munich, we were expecting Secretary of State Mike Pompeo or Secretary of Defense Mark Esper to mention the deal in their speeches this morning, but neither of them did. After his speech, Secretary of Defense Esper finally addressed the deal when asked about it by a moderator, and here's what he said.
I think there's general agreement, and it's my view as well, that we have to give peace a chance, that the best, if not only way forward in Afghanistan is through a political agreement. And that means taking some risk. That means enabling our diplomats. And that means working together with our partners and allies on the ground to effect such a thing.
And Scott, one of those partners, the government of Afghanistan, sent its president, Ashraf Ghani, here, and he met with Secretary Pompeo yesterday.
Well, what is it that Secretary Pompeo did talk about?
Well, it's interesting. His entire speech this morning was sort of a rebuke to the theme of this very conference. Organizers have coined this conference Westlessness to frame the idea that the world is becoming less Western. Pompeo talked about how the world still looks to the West for guidance and a model, and how quote-unquote non-Western countries, especially those with autocratic governments, are an increasing threat to a Western-built international order. The threat of China was a big focus of his speech. He and Defense Secretary Esper talked at length about how China telecoms company Huawei aims to use its 5G infrastructure to steal data, spy on us, and undermine Western democracies. And what's interesting here is the U.S. delegation, which included 24 members of Congress, were all unified in this position. Yesterday, House Speaker Nancy Pelosi criticized Huawei, as did Republican Senator Lindsey Graham.
Of course, China has a delegation there, too, and I wonder if they responded.
Yeah, yesterday during a session, a member of China's National People's Congress stood up and challenged Speaker Pelosi, asking her whether democracy in the U.S. was so fragile that Huawei could possibly pose a threat to it. Pelosi sort of snapped back at the Chinese official. She accused Huawei of stealing U.S. technology, and then went on to say that China's human rights violations are evidence alone that countries should avoid working with Huawei. And Scott, I think the reason that Speaker Pelosi and others in the U.S. delegation are hammering on this issue so much is their audience here in Munich. Many European countries are in the process of deciding whether to allow Huawei to build their 5G networks. But these warnings from the U.S. seem to be sort of ringing hollow in their ears because they're also worried about the U.S. intelligence apparatus spying on their telecommunications networks, too.
And back to the Afghanistan agreement. 7 days of reduced violence doesn't sound like a huge step forward. When's it supposed to begin?
Well, those details were not revealed today or yesterday. No one seems to be talking about this yet. I think perhaps the officials, this was hinted at by one of the officials, are waiting for President Trump to weigh in on this before the weekend is finished.
NPR's Rob Schmitz in Munich. Thanks so much.
Thank you, Scott.
And that's up first for Saturday, February 15th, 2020. I'm Lulu Garcia-Navarro.
And I'm Scott Simon. Up first, back Monday, with news you need to start your day. And please follow us on social media. We're at Up First on Twitter.
And of course, you know the news does not stop when this podcast ends. We have a solution for that.
Weekend edition, Saturday and Sunday. You can find it on your NPR station at stations.npr.org.
Finding love at work can be exciting, but mixing the personal and professional can be high risk. This week, NPR's Life Kit is talking tips for love in the workplace. Listen and subscribe to Life Kit.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Georgetown School of Continuing Studies, offering online degrees designed to fit your schedule. All hours, all Georgetown. Learn more at scs.georgetown.edu.